This is With an Ohio Bias, a podcast for real fans with D and Jake. And we got somebody to talk about the NFL experience and what some of these rookies might be going through. And that's Jonathan Wells is back on the podcast. Welcome back, Jonathan.
I appreciate it, man. Nice to talk to you guys.
Jonathan, we want you to, you know, tell me and Jake and our listeners just, you know, the whole experience you had, you know, share some of the stuff, maybe some people don't understand about the NFL. And then, of course, we're going to talk about some of the guys that came out in this draft class. So tell us about how that process was for you. We kind of finished the last podcast, which everybody truly enjoyed the story of how you helped usher in that great era of beating the team up north. But get done, basically, you know, football season, and then you're preparing for the draft. How was that experience leading up to the draft for you?
As an older guy, man, you know, I do a lot of reflecting on things that I could have did differently. And, you know, at the time, you know, I thought I did everything that I could have. But looking back on it, I could have did a lot of things differently. But, you know, for me, my thing was, you know, I got invited to the Senior Bowl. So that was the next thing for me. I was one of the last backs that they invited down to the Senior Bowl. When I got there, they basically told me I wasn't good enough to play tailback, so I had to play fullback. So the whole first day of practice, I got my hand on the ground, lead blocking on guys. I'm like, I've never done this in my life. It's not what I do. But I'm a competitor, so, you know, I'm going to bring it. After the first day of practice, I told my agent, I'm like, listen, if they brought me down here to do this, I might as well just leave because I don't have no film doing this, and I'm not about to do this in the NFL, so we need to figure something out. So my agent, Joe Siegel, he calls Mike Holmgren, who was my head coach at the time for the Senior Bowl. I was like, listen, we got to give my guys some running back. So, you know, they was like, oh, okay, we'll give them a little bit of one back and we'll see how it goes. I never came out of the starting lineup from the day they let me get in that backfield. Like, I took everybody's job down there. Liddell Betts, everybody that was supposed to be ranked in front of me, I went down there and I straight up, I raped them, point blank, period. So I was like one of the most talked about guys down there in the Senior Bowl. So I took care of business there. But then I made a terrible decision as I look back on it. I went home to train in New Orleans. Horrible decision. I should have stayed in Ohio. I should have went somewhere where I didn't know too many people. You know, I got down to New Orleans. My agent gave me a couple $100,000, and I basically just lost my mind. I didn't train like I could have, you know, and I think I cost myself some money because if I would have came in and ran a legit 4.45 or below, I definitely don't think I would have slid down to the 99th pick. So, you know, my draft experience, man, was it didn't go anywhere as planned, to be honest with you. I had a decent pro day. You know, caught everything, ran great routes, did great drills, but I ran like a 4.49, 4.5 flat 40. But, you know, I didn't realize, you know, I was a one-year starter, you know what I mean? So all of the guys that were coming out in that draft, they had been two-, three-year starters. So, you know, in the eyes of the scouts, you know, they had an advantage on me because they had more playing time and more experience. So, you know, there's a lot of things, man, I look back on, especially this time, you know, sitting down, watching the draft and, you know, all this stuff just pops back in my head, but
man, you know, us Browns fans, man, we don't have the highest regard for Mike Holmgren and the way he evaluates talent, so that's definitely understandable to us.
Yeah, they basically disrespected me, but by the time I left there, I was his guy.
Go ahead and give us the, like, how you got the call. You know, you talked about, you know, dealing with your agent, and then you didn't go to the combine either. Was that because of an injury or?
No, I went to the combine, but remember, okay, back at that time, we had Coach Dave Kennedy. And no Ohio State players worked out at the combine back then. Work out, y'all come see us. You know what I mean? That was just our mentality back then. So I went, you know, I was there the whole time. I was at the combine, absolutely. But, you know, we didn't work out there. So we made them come back to Ohio State, and that's when they, you know, that's when we worked out back in the day.
Okay. So how was it when you got that call, man? I mean, did you feel like you were going to go earlier? Or what, you know, what kind of grade did you think you had on yourself? And what had you heard from teams, you know, leading up to that call?
Well, my draft day experience, oh, my God. Well, you know, according to my agent, according to, you know, the Mel Kuypers of the world and whoever it was back then who was making the suggestions, I was basically rated the fourth back that should have been drafted that year. So, you know, I figured T.J. Duckett came out early. I figured he was going, you know, he had two or three great years in a row.
He was coming off an injury, though.
I outperformed him my senior year, absolutely.
Yeah.
But William Green, another kid from Boston College, he rushed for like 2,000 yards. So
we know him well. He ended up with the Cleveland Browns.
Exactly. So, you know, in my heart of all hearts, I was really hoping to come to the Cleveland Browns at that 16th pick. I was just hoping that they just did it. But they went with Will Green, and we know how that turned out, so it's all good. But and then Clinton Portis, those were the three guys that were basically rated in front of me, and I respected that. That's fine. Now, I'm rated fourth. I don't end up being drafted until the 10th back. So I was rated as a second-round draft pick, you know, from various boards, whoever I talked to, teams, whatever. So imagine me having a draft day party at my house with media, and I don't get drafted. Remember back then, the draft was only 2 days. So it was first rounds 1 through 3, and then the next day is rounds 4 through 7. So I got a big party in the hood. You know, it's going down. I get no call. You want to talk about distraught and just the most humbling experience of my life? Oh, my God. So, honestly, when I got my call, I was in bed, pissy drunk, because I drank my head off the night before because I was mad as hell I didn't get drafted. And remind you, I was the first pick of the next day. So I'm drunk as hell in my bed, and the phone rings. I'm not even watching the draft. The phone rings. I'm like, hello. Hey, Jonathan Wells, Dom Capers, we're about to make you Houston, Texas. Welcome to the family. Oh, what's up, coach? Let's do it. I'm pissy drunk. I'm not even up yet. You know what I'm saying? So I rush, turn on the TV, and I kind of go back to my house. You know, all the media comes back, family comes back, but it was a really it wasn't a good experience for me. It didn't go as planned, but that kind of like put a chip on my shoulder, and I just said, you know what, I'm going to take somebody's job, and that's what I did as a rookie. I ended up starting and doing my thing behind what the line was like. I don't even have to say that. So I had just went out and did my thing regardless, but it was definitely a bittersweet day for me. I was happy, but I wasn't happy.
So, Jonathan, talk about that process to starter. You get to your first NFL training camp. What is that like? And then what's it like in day one when game one comes around and you walk into the NFL locker room for your first time?
It was incredible. I hated the Texans. Now that I look back on it, I had no reason to hate the Texans. The Texans gave me a 4-year contract. I played it out. I made a few million dollars. The Texans did everything that they were supposed to do for me. You know, obviously playing time and things like that I thought could have went another way, but it is what it is. But the overall experience in Houston was incredible. You got to remember, we are a new franchise. Everything's brand new. Facilities top-notch. First-class organization. I mean, we are adored by the city. Everywhere we went, it was incredible, the vibe in the city. And, the first game of the season, we're opening up with the Dallas Cowboys. So it gets no bigger. Sunday night football, Dallas Cowboys coming to our house. You know, like I tell people, we had the first retractable roof, so don't let that Jerry's World stuff fool you. He just did that just to outdo us. We was the first one that was doing that in Houston, in Texas. So, we go out and we actually beat the Cowboys, and we beat them good. We put that thing on them. On our first game, we come out, get a win. So you can imagine, what the city's like, when we come out and beat the Cowboys in our first inaugural game. So, we had high hopes for that season. We really did.
But was there anything football related that was harder to you? Was it something, picking up the playbook or things like that? How was that part of it for you?
Playbook's always tough. It's different verbiage. But as a running back, we pretty much do the same things. Like, we got to check the linebacker to the outside linebacker and make sure you peek backside for the corner coming off the backside blitz. That's pretty much all we do in pass protection. So, That wasn't really a big deal for me. What was a big deal was the speed of the game, the intensity of practice. It was 2-3 steps faster, clearly. Like, everything's full throttle. OTAs, my first OTA, I was like, oh, my God, we're flying out here. And all we had on was helmets. So, I had to really kind of get adjusted to the speed of the game. But other than that, it's just football, man. It's the same guys you played against in college. Nobody's hitting harder or none of that like people think. It's just a little bit faster, a little bit more intense. That's it.
How was the pressure there in Houston? And we know you came in with another name that's more familiar because of his brother, his little brother, actually. But you came in with David Carr. How was that, you guys, that offense, you talked about the O-line just briefly, but how was the pressure feeling that you guys, you got off to the start you wanted, but wanting to, prove yourselves and be able to score in that offense, especially with Dom Capers being a defensive coach?
Exactly. You know, like I said, they spent a lot of money in the pre-draft, you know, on defense. So we came in, our defense was full of studs. I mean, Jamie Sharper, Aaron Glenn, you know, G-Funk, Gary Walker. Like, we had some dogs on defense. So our defense played lights out that year. They really did. Now, on the other hand, we had 7 rookies starting on offense that year. So, you know, most of them were on the offensive line. The quarterback was a rookie. One of the receivers was a rookie, and I was a rookie running back, and we had a rookie fullback. So, you know, we just got thrown into the fire, man. But one thing I can say that I'm proud of, we worked hard. You know, we put work in, you know, and I'm proud of the effort that we put in. We ended up winning maybe 4 games that year, but we could have easily won 7 to 8 games. We were right there. I'm talking about against the Patriots. I'm talking about, you know, we played some solid teams down to the nitty-gritty. We beat some good teams. We beat the Ravens, Ray Lewis, Ed Reed. We beat them guys as my rookie year. So it's a lot of great memories that came out of that rookie season. And, you know, we played hard. It was just tough, you know, for 7 rookies, you know, trying to get used to the NFL. It was tough.
Yeah, hey, that's still 3 more games than the Browns won last season. And they've been doing it since 99, Johnson. So, you know what I mean. But we don't – that's a podcast for another day.
Right. It's all good.
Hey, Johnson. You know, going into your rookie season on an expansion team, that's different than a lot of rookie experiences where you go into an established team. But there's still veterans and a veteran presence, I would imagine. Kind of explain how that works. And was there veterans that took you under your wing and how the leadership structure got established in an expansion situation?
Well, you know, I'll be honest. I'm kind of an alpha dog. You know, any team I've ever played on, I consider myself the leader. I'm the running back in that huddle. And I consider myself the heartbeat of that team. So, you know, I took on the leadership role to the best of my ability. Like, I made a rule. If you catch the ball, you sprint all the way to the goal line, jog back. That's for all skill players, running backs, wide receiver, tight ends. You catch it, sprint to the goal line, jog back. So I made guys work, you know, the way I knew how to work. But I didn't have a lot of guys on offense to school me. The only veteran would have been James Allen, who was the starter. He started, like, the first 4 or 5 games, even though Dom Capers told me, yeah, you really deserve to start, but I'm just going to go with the veteran. I'm like, well, what sense does that make? But anyway, he was a good leader for me, James Allen. But other than that, we didn't have anybody. Most of the leadership was on defense, you know, so they were kind of taking care of their guys. And, you know, the guys that they had, young guys coming up under them, and we don't spend a lot of time with the defensive guys in meetings. So, you know, I kind of had to take on that leadership role. And, you know, I made people work, and that's all I know how to do.
So the draft just came and went here, and, you know, running backs last year, of course, Ezekiel Elliott, top 5 back, that seems to be working out pretty well for the Cowboys. Did you notice any in this year's draft that kind of stood out to you to keep an eye out for?
Well, definitely Leonard Fournette, you know, my boy from my rival high school, St. Aug, down in New Orleans. You know, I'm definitely rooting for him to do his thing. You know, I will caution him when I see him, you know, keep your weight down. You know, don't get up around 240, 245. You don't want to do that. I did that my last year, and it inhibited my long run ability. I should have stayed down 225, 230, period, no more. So when I see him, I know he had got up around 240-something during the draft. I mean, during the combine. But I see he slim back down to 228, so he needs to stay there. Because he's a bruising back, but he doesn't want to take all that punishment. You got to make guys miss in this league, or you won't last long. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him play. Christian McCaffrey, exciting player. I'm still interested in seeing if he can just line up and dot the I and play, you know, running back in the NFL. I'm interested in seeing that. But I think they'll be able to get him in good spots and good situations, and he's definitely a playmaker. So, you know, those were really the two guys that stood out to me. I think Texas got a steal. With the kid from Texas. The Texans got a steal with the kid from Texas. The running back, is it Freeman?
Dante Freeman,
Dante Freeman. I think he may be able to do some good things over there with the quarterback, Deshaun Watson. So, you know, man, listen, the draft is it's a drop in the bucket, man. You never know who's going to step in, find the right system. That's what it's all about, finding the right system, finding a coach that believes in you and letting you do your thing. You know, you can be prohibitive. If a coach likes another back and that's just his style of back, then you're stuck. There's nothing you can do unless he gets hurt. So, you know, it's a lot of that goes on. But, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing those three guys and seeing what they can do.
Two side questions real quick. One, on Fournette and McCaffrey, how did you feel about their decision to skip the bowl game?
Well, you know, we had some guys do that my senior year, but they actually had to have surgery. So I kind of understood that. You know, that's a tough situation, man. you know, I'm a team guy, you know. So at the end of the day, we've been rocking together this long, you know what I mean? Like, basically, you're saying that you feel like you're better than us. And, you know, I get it. You're going top five pick, protecting yourself and your family. So you can't really be mad about it. But at the same time, I don't think I would do it. You know what I mean? But once again, I wasn't in a position where I was going to be a top 10 pick either. So, you know, that kind of makes a big difference. But I think that is going to set a precedent for people to start doing that now. So it will be a ripple effect, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
We know the Browns got a young team right now. How important is the support of feeling like the coach is behind you? And basically, that we hear a lot about that with the players that interact with Hugh Jackson. You kind of see that with some of the guys, even in just the small interactions already during that, you know, welcome to press conferences, things like that. And the one article came out about Greg Williams telling those guys don't start writing checks with their mouth that their ass can't cash. How important is that to have those coaches behind you, but also feel like they are going to put you in a position, kind of like what you're saying, for success in the right system?
I mean, it's extremely important for your coaching staff to have faith in you. That was one of my biggest frustrations in Houston. It's like, you know, I come out, I start. Honestly, if you start me all 16 games, I still get 1,000 yards behind that offensive line. So it's a whole – now going into my second year, I'm in a whole nother situation. You know what I mean? So then you come back, you take me out the playbook, you don't give me any explanations. You just basically tell me you're not playing this year. I'm like, oh, okay. So that's when – I just jumped into the special teams role. So, like I said, Chris Palmer, I'm sure you know this guy from Cleveland Browns.
Oh, yeah.
Me and him, it took me 3 years to get on the same page with him, and not from any of my doing. I just wasn't one of his guys. So he kept continuously bringing guys in. I'm like, dude, these guys can't hold my jockstrap, pimp. I don't know what you're trying to do, but it's not going to work. You might as well cut me if you think this guy about to come take my spot. It ain't happening. So finally, you know, 3-4 years in, oh, man, I mean, you know, John, man, you know, man, you're a damn good back, man. I got to tell you, I mean, I don't want to hear that now. You done bitched me for 2 years. You know what I'm saying? Like, you done cost me money. But that's how it goes. So you need a coaching staff to buy into you and believe in you. And, like, ultimately, if you go out there and make plays most of the time, you're going to get your opportunity. I made plays and rushed for 100 yards, and I didn't see the field for the next 3 weeks. You know, so that's what really – led to me ultimately leaving the NFL in 4 years. It was really just frustration. There was no other reason for me to leave. My last 3 games in Houston, I actually started. So it was no reason for me to leave at 26 years old and healthy, but I just got around the wrong people and just made another decision, and I regretted it for a long time because I let frustration, you know, get the best of me.
And you talked about it when you were in college. It seemed like any time you got, you know, 15 carries or more, I think that was week 3 in that fourth year, you put up 118 yards, man. In that game, and you had 18 carries, and that was kind of the similar production. You had over 15 carries in those last 3 games, and then you had 87 yards. And this is not me looking at it. I just had looked at your stats before, man. But,
yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, it correlates with what you're kind of saying about getting that rhythm and getting that opportunity.
Yeah, running back is all about, at least for me. Like, once I get into a zone, there's nothing you could do with me. But I gotta feel the game. I got to get game reps. There's nothing, you can practice hard. You can do all of that. But it's nothing like getting actual game reps. When you get game reps, you're going to get better. So every time I got an opportunity to get out there and do me, I did me. Never let them down. So, you know, that's just how it goes, though. Like I said, you need a coach that believes in you. If not, you know, you're in trouble. And actually, if I really look back at it now, if I knew what I knew now, After they just took me out the playbook my second year, I should have told them, well, just trade me then. I should have just not went to camp and say, well, y'all not even going to give me a chance to keep my job, but you give David Carr a chance to keep his job, Jabbar Gaffney a chance to keep his job, and all these other rookies. I didn't even have a chance to keep my job. I'm like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? These guys can come out here and just blow it off the map, but they're getting another chance to come back and be starters. So, it was a real frustrating situation in Houston. That's what I say. I love the organization, but I left on frustrating terms.
All right, Jonathan, we're going to get you out of here on this one, man. Just talk about how important the fans were during those trying times in Houston, though. I'm sure that you still got a lot of love, even when you go back now, man. Like, you know, just the Texans are doing better now. They're a perennial playoff team because of their division. But talk about how the fans have still embraced that team and how they had some good football fans that carried over to the Texans from the Oilers days.
Now, the fans in Houston are fanatics. They're great. They were, like I said, I lived a great experience playing for the Houston Texans when it came to anything off the field. Like, it was nothing but love in the city. I'm talking about from all the celebrities, any rappers you want to name, Bun B, Scarface, Jay Prince. I mean, all of them, nothing but love.
Pimp C was alive when you was down there then.
Oh, absolutely. I lived.
I just made that. I don't know why I didn't make that connection before. My bad. I just got excited.
I lived in my head. I live two blocks from Bun B. That's my guy. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to talk. You got to give us a UGK experience, like talking about Pimp C, man. Please, like, you know what I'm saying, the late great Pimp C.
Listen, the late great Pimp, he is what he is on the record, man. He a wild boy. You know what I'm saying? Pimp C a wild boy, but at the same time, they kind of even each other out. He the wild one. Bun B really like the laid back, you know, OG of the clique. So, you know, they listen, that's a hip-hop legendary group. And I'm happy to say, man, I had many nights with these guys, many days at their crib, like just really getting it in. So, you know, Houston was phenomenal when it comes to the fan base. I love Houston. But I've distanced myself from them. I haven't even been back to Houston in 6, 7, 8, 9 years. I haven't even been to the facility. So that's actually, I'm getting ready to go back over there and get myself back juiced in with these guys, because it's number love for me.
The NFL, like, even for the athlete, that whole way that they exercise, and even with nutrition, you were talking about that when it comes to your advice for Leonard Fournette and some of the rookies about keeping the weight down for running back. How have you seen that part of it change, and how have you even incorporated it into your life now as you move forward?
Well, I'm the first one to be honest. I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana, and eating is not my strong point. Never has been. I just
can't be with that gumbo down there the way it tastes.
Yeah,
it can't be.
Crawfish etouffee, you know. Listen, I'm not the guy to preach that. I would tell them from the mistakes that I made, but that was never my strong point. Like, I just, you know, obviously we worked out so much, so I always stayed in great shape anyway. But my eating habits could have definitely been better. And like I said, my last year, I ballooned up to 240, 245, I mean 245, 250, because I let Dime Capers talk me into playing fullback half the time, so I let my weight go, and I should have never did that. But nutrition is everything, man. You got to give yourself every competitive edge that you can. There's too many hungry guys. There's too many guys getting drafted next year and the year after that. No job is safe. The average life of a running back in the NFL is 3 years. So you can't take nothing for granted. When I tell you that them 4 years went by so fast, oh, my goodness. And I would give anything to get them back and redo it, but it's not going to happen. So you got to take advantage and really, like, maximize your potential, maximize the money you can get out of that league. I left a lot of money on the table in that league. I left a lot of money on the table. And, you know, and I regretted that for a long time, too, but I'm on my own thing now, so it's all good.
First of all, a lot of Buckeyes making a big difference in the NFL right now for a lot of teams.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be happy about that. But there was some news that came out that the word's out around the league that Nick Saban and that Alabama program, a lot of their players, when they get to the NFL, they've been pretty much grinded down and have seen their ceiling. Meanwhile, you see Ohio State players flourishing everywhere, really. As a recruit, do you see that? I mean, is that something that makes a difference?
No, I don't see that at all. All I know is that Nick Saban just had 12, 13, what he had, 10, 11 drafted this year again. Listen, Nick Saban has one job. That's to get you an education, or two jobs, get you an education and potentially get you to the NFL. Once he does that, the rest is on you. You can't blame Nick Saban for what happens when you get there. So either you go out there, make it happen, or you don't. You know, Nick Saban is doing an excellent job, and I would play for him any day. I don't know about the burnout. Those guys are in great physical shape. You know what I mean? So Ohio State guys, yes, we get it in on Sundays, and I love it. I'm proud of it, and that's one of our bragging rights to separate us. But, you know, Nick Saban's not doing nothing wrong. You know, like I said, they're getting it in. They're doing what he's doing, what he's supposed to do.
Johnson, we thank you again for sharing your experiences, man. We got to get you back talking NFL as much as possible when your schedule permits. But thank you for joining the podcast again right now, man.
Oh, no problem, man. I appreciate you for having me, man.
All right. You can hear more of things like this on With an Ohio Bias. Be checking us out, withanohiobias.com. You can find us on iTunes, the full podcast on iTunes. Just search With an Ohio Bias. Give us a like, subscribe, and write us a review even. And we would really appreciate that. Thanks for listening.